This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we have a Masters Monday today as Hideki Matsuyama wins the golf tournament, first major of the season. Now we start looking ahead to the PGA, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship. But Augusta National, for the second time in about a six-month span, it had its golf tournament. Last November, won by Dustin Johnson, and now Hideki Matsuyama from Japan taking the green jacket. It was a golf tournament that was highly anticipated because the crowd was returning, and it was highly anticipated because it was going to be springtime at Augusta again. But the tournament didn't have Tiger Woods. And listen, the tournament before has been a couple of times where Tiger Woods has not been present. But when you go, part of the Masters lore is the people that come back year in and year out. And the people that come back, even if they're not in super competitive abilities. And Tiger Woods' absence, it would have been neat, even when he wasn't playing well, because he wasn't playing particularly well last year, to still be there, because I think we have this fascination with him, even more so than a 51-year-old Phil Mickelson. But this golf tournament is unique in that regard, is that all the former champions are there. You get to see people, and they do a good job in the broadcast of, here's Jose Maria Olazabal. Totally forgot about him, didn't you? Well, he's 55 now, and here he is putting for a double bogey on 17 because he's a former champion that is kicking around. Larry Mize, who's not playing golf anymore, is still playing in the Masters. Hideki Matsuyama winning this golf tournament is great for the country of Japan. They love golf. They cherish golf. There's so many of them that play. And for that country to be on top of the golf world and hosting the Olympic Games, where golf will be included, Matsuyama is going to be an ambassador for the sport for Japan. And he is going to make a lot of money over the next couple of years as a Masters champ, probably for the rest of his life, a Masters champion. Coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll get into the silliness with the Mets. We'll also talk more Masters coming up throughout the show today. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb, the Monday edition as we continue along on Wake Up Call. What is the good of the day?
Another sign that we're nearing the end of the pandemic.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you're a member of Costco.
I am not.
Yes. But you are familiar with Costco and what Costco has to offer.
Yep.
They, since the pandemic started, and they reopened their stores back, I think it was like in April, they have discontinued having the free samples as you walk around.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And they...
Sam's Club, same thing.
Yeah, and they limited the food court to just, you know, hey, you can order your food, but then you got to eat somewhere else. Well, there's no confirmed date yet, but the samples and the food court are going to be open soon or
awesome.
Are coming back.
Those are great. I don't like shopping, but whenever we were at Sam's Club, I just would go for that.
Go for the samples.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get your appetite wet, and then I don't know what Sam's Club has to offer, but the $1.50 hot dog and soda combo is second to none.
Is there a rule with the? I mean, I always want to get two or some go back. Can you?
Well,
do
I know with
care about
I know
that,
with
or?
Costco. I mean, they don't want you to just sit there and just hover and hoard the plate.
Yeah, hoard the plate.
But there is no limit. They're there to just keep pushing food out over and over again.
They're putting in a little ramekin cup. It's not like they're giving you a meal.
Right.
It's like, oh, you like the flatbread dough that we're cooking up for you? Here's a thimble slice of it. Enjoy.
The only time I think they do that is when it's a food that nobody wants.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you see that poor person just sitting there pushing out the food and tray's still full, and they're just looking, oh, man, you know.
This may sound amazing, but I've actually bought stuff based on
this. Oh, of course.
No, that's not always the case. My wife is like, no, we don't normally eat that. We're not eating that. I'm like, but it's delicious.
That's how I got into Costco had these, it's like a spinach ravioli.
Oh, nice.
Never would have thought of having one until we had a sample. And, you know, we kind of looked at each other like, yeah, we could eat this as a meal. This is
sure we
this
could.
Is pretty good.
It was very good.
It's just mixed with olive oil, and they have like this little herb packet that you put on. God, it's
well,
great.
I am very glad that it's coming back.
Yes.
That's good.
Finally. Because you know what? I mean, we went to Costco today. They still have the people standing there at the display, you know, the sample display. And it's just like a plexiglass thing saying, you know, just showing you what the food looks like. It says for display only. And you're like, that's not the same thing.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. And then, I want to taste the pork meat bun thing.
And then grabbing my hot dog and having to go eat in the car. Nah, I don't want that either.
No, neither.
I want to sit down and just enjoy it and try to rationalize why I spent as much as I did at Costco.
Well, good. I'm glad that they're doing that, and I'm glad we're getting closer to this pandemic being done.
I know.
What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that the Major League Baseball should just do away with their instant replay.
Really bad. I want to get more into this because it's not going well.
I mean, we've rewind back to last Thursday. I know we touched on it a little bit on Friday because it was a Metsy way to win a game. But Michael Conforto leaning in for a strike and taking a walk-off hit by pitch. I mean, that should have been a loan to say, you know, we need to pay more attention to instant replay. But no, last night we get Phillies and Braves in a walk-off, or not really a walk-off run, but a
run at the top of the ninth inning.
Run at the top of the ninth inning where Alec Baum, third baseman for the Phillies, never touched home plate.
No, he never touched home plate, and he came in on a tag because he was sacrificed by Didi Gregorius.
Yeah.
And he came in, and he never touched home plate. And then so the Braves thought, well, they'll review that.
Of course.
And they'll overturn that. This is not even close. He didn't touch the plate. And then they did, and then they said, nah, he's in. The run scores. And what people are now speculating is, okay, we get it. They don't want to overturn this now. There's some sort of thought process of, I don't want to overturn. I don't want to look bad by overturning a bad call.
Yeah.
Like which happens in the NFL all the time, right? The NFL will make a call, then they go to the window, they'll go to the booth, and then the booth goes, no, it's pass interference or whatever it is, or it's whatever. And they go, okay, that's overturned now.
But
it's like, do umpires, they have so much pride that they're like, well, no, even when video sees it, we're not going
against our
own. Exactly,
that's what I was going to say. We don't hold, I can't remember us ever going on a rant about a ref. Like, this ref is terrible because he keeps missing all the calls.
No, we just want replay to help.
Like, we understand that.
What's the point?
We understand that in the moment, I mean, it may be tough to see. Like, in real time, that him coming across the plate and looking like he touched home plate, I would have called him safe. He beat the throw, and that's all you're looking at is he beat the throw.
Right.
Then if you're able to get to replay and go, listen, he never even touched home plate, then you can make the decision there.
Then you go, hey, we didn't get it.
Yeah, and we're not mad at you. We're not getting down on you, umpire. It's real time. It's tough to see.
And the Braves are saying all the right things that we were saying that people were saying about the Mets game, which is if you have instant replay, what are we doing with it?
Right.
Like, what's the point? The Braves are all saying, why do we have this? Because, again, it's you – when you used to accept umpires' bad decisions, bad calls, it was just part of the game, right? You kind of thought, well, the karma of the sport would even out, right? We win some, we lose some, we got some bad calls, we get some bad calls, it all works. But they were trying to take that away and saying, well, here's something that's going to help. Here's replay. And now the players are like, well, when do we get to see it in action? Like, when do we get to see it actually work? Because this is baloney. Like, you literally see a guy not touch the plate on replay, and you're too afraid to overturn it? For what reason?
And you watch the replay. How do they not see it either?
Right.
That's the thing. I mean, or was it like, you know what, hey, we got dinner reservations, we got to get out of here.
And that's where people are saying they are seeing it, but they're afraid to go against it. They're afraid to make their profession look bad.
Yeah.
But again, you don't have that problem in the NFL. The NFL doesn't have a problem with having a replay official going, now, guys, you missed it.
No, the only thing we complained about was like, wait, how is that play not reviewable?
Right.
Shouldn't that play be reviewable? And because that's not on the referees. That's us going,
okay, why are there certain limitations on this play? This type of play is reviewable, but this type of play is not.
Yeah, you're right, exactly. And then the NFL says, well, maybe we'll make it reviewable. And then they make it reviewable, and then they go, man, that maybe wasn't a good idea. Like, well, just, right. Like, at least they're doing that. But when something is reviewable, you know, a score, you know, did he cross the plane with for a touchdown? When that is reviewable, you expect them to get it right.
I get it. Right? And listen, I don't want to open up Pandora's box and make every pitch reviewable.
Of course. Right.
Because the games are, you know, long and drawn out as it is. But, I mean, that's got to be a situation where, you know, you just take a look at it. Maybe go to New York and it's out of your hands. Maybe that's why the NFL said that. It's like, oh, you know, it was the referee. It was an unnamed guy sitting in a booth, you know, 1,000 miles away who made the determination.
Right.
And, you know, that way it's off the referee's shoulders at the game to call make that decision. I don't know.
Exactly. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is, you know, we talked about the Mets earlier, so I'm going to stick with the Mets, is that they just should trade Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, boy, do they
trade
blow him. I mean, man, my goodness. Nobody's pitching better than Jacob DeGrom.
No. 14 strikeouts yesterday, and the Mets can't get one run for him.
That's Saturday, right?
Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah, they can't. This is the problem they had a couple of years ago when he won the Cy Young.
Yes.
With 11-11 record.
Like 10 wins, 11 wins, right?
Yeah.
A full season, by the way. Wasn't shortened pandemic season.
No, it was like 2 years ago. And
A 1-something ERA.
Yeah, and he was magnificent. And the Mets bats were like, yeah, when he's on the mound, we just don't know how.
We don't need a hit.
Exactly. Waste another outing.
I mean, it's
14 strikeouts. You gotta be kidding.
What contract did he sign? And I'm not talking about with the Mets, because he is by far one of the most dominant pitchers in the National League. I mean, and we talked about the year he won the Cy Young. He gave up 3 runs in the very first game he pitched, and then from then on out, never gave up more than like 2 runs, and then had a stretch where he barely gave. Yeah, I don't think he gave up a run.
Yeah, and this is a Mets lineup that should be explosive.
Yes,
it should be explosive.
But I just
seriously talented.
That's why I ask, what kind of contract did he sign? Because it's amazing to me that, you know, whenever he pitches, the Mets bats go dormant.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, yeah, like you said, he's probably the most dominant pitcher in the game
he's
right now.
He's got to be. He, you know, you could probably only hold it in for so long, right? Before you start going, guys.
I want to see him explode.
I can't do this anymore. I'm going out there giving you a gem of a game, and you guys stand up there as if you've never seen a curveball before. Can you please swing the bats and let's hope for something to happen here? Can you please do it? Because I'm getting tired of striking out 14 people when I get out there and you guys can't put a run across the board.
He's one of those guys where if he decided not to be about the team, you wouldn't hold it against him.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, we'll get mad at players who are like in it for themselves. He's got to get to that point. It's like, I don't know what else I can do.
You know, like, we always skewer players. 0.64 ERA. He lost a no decision in his first game. And lost a 3-0 shutout loss on Saturday. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What? How?
And
how
it's not even the
happen?
Fact. I mean, the guy who came in to relieve him gave up 2 runs.
Right.
That's not even an issue. It's just the fact that the Mets could not get a hit. I mean, everyone's striking out. Everyone's grounding out. There's no run support when he's on the mound ever.
Yeah, he's got 21 strikeouts already this season. Unreal. All right, when we come back, we got more Mets news because the Mets yesterday it got rained out, but it was a little more to that story. Marcus Stroman, who was pitching, was not very happy with his team. We got that for you coming up. But I want to talk about Tub of Towels because over the weekend, I decided to, beautiful spring day, I'm going to grill. Got the grill all fired up. Had gotten a new grill because my other one broke. So I was really excited. You know, when you get something new, you want to keep it clean. Well, I was putting barbecue sauce on some chicken on the grill, and barbecue sauce got on the grill and got on the sides. And I mean, I made a mess. Tub of Towels, it looks brand new again. These are extra large, heavy duty cleaning wipes. They have over 30,000 5-star reviews, and for a reason. They break the bond that holds dirt and grease on surface. They clean just about everything. I talked about my grill. You can use it in your car. You can use it on floors, tiles, furniture, paint rollers, carpet. They get out ink, glue, food stains, drink stains, bird messes, adhesive decals, paint stains, grease, oil, tar, you name it. And They are in a vapor lock lid, snap shut, and they stay moist forever. Try squeezing the tub to get its strength. Tub of towels, it's available at AutoZone, O'Reilly, Advance, Napa, Pep Boys. These things are monsters. They clean everything, and they are fantastic. Tub of towels, again, find them at those stores for your convenience because you know you're going to be messing, but then clean up with tub of towels. All right, coming up next, what did the Mets do Sunday that made people go, oh, come on? That's next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
O'Reilly Auto Parts here to keep your car on the road for the right parts. Advice from their professional parts people and their free loaner tool program. There's no need to purchase a tool if you're only going to use it once. Your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store has more than 80 specialty tools available to rent for your next repair. Refundable deposit required at the time of rental. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Ask about their free loaner tool program or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Rex Hoggard is going to join us, Golf Channel. We'll talk about Hideki Matsuyama's Masters victory and the Masters in general. That's coming up in 12 minutes. All right, so yesterday, the Marlins and the Mets game got rained out at Citi Field, which you would expect because rain was in the forecast all day in New York City. A steady rain was in the forecast all day for New York City. In case you didn't hear it, it was scheduled to rain all day in New York City. But somehow,
was it all day?
All day, okay. Yes, all day, because the Mets thought that it would eventually taper off. Their forecast called for light showers and eventually would leave, which, by the way, nobody else had. So what did they do? They started their game against the Marlins in a rain downpour. And Marcus Stroman went out to the mound and threw seven pitches before they went, nah, this isn't going to work. Sorry about that. And called off the game, wasting a start of Stroman and putting their players at risk. So the game actually started for a little bit, and guys were out there running through puddles to go get the ball, putting players at risk, Stroman on the mound, wasting a start before they finally went, oh, wait, the weather report did say it was going to rain a lot today. Maybe we shouldn't have started this thing in the first place. So they're going to make up the game as in a part of a day-night doubleheader in August.
Listen, I know that 30 years ago, predicting weather was always a crapshoot.
Sure. Advanced technology.
I think they've gotten a little bit better.
Yeah, I think they got a little bit better.
They may not be down to, like, you know, Back to the Future better, where he's like, oh, wait 5 seconds. You know, so, we're not there yet, but
this is what Marcus Stroman pointed out on Twitter. This game should have never been started. Not smart at all. Those conditions put everyone at risk. Beyond happy, no players on either side were injured. Hate that I have to wait another 5 days to pitch again. That's a miserable feeling. Oh, very good. So the Mets were aware of his tweet. I'm sure they apologized to him, I guess. But even Luis Rojas, the manager, was like, I don't think we should have done this.
It's funny to me. He's like, okay, well, why don't you just start him again? I mean, he didn't really warm up.
Yeah, I don't. Eh.
I don't get why. It's like, oh, he started 5 days later.
Yeah, exactly. God, is this
are their arms that fragile? They're like, oh, he threw about seven pitches. You know, I mean, I know he warmed up like an hour beforehand, but.
Listen, you can do a lot of sports in the rain, like football. You can play football in the rain, obviously. Yeah. And golf. Even though they'll throw out the air horn, it's usually because of lightning. If there's a light drizzle, they'll let those guys. Those guys will play golf.
Of course. If not, you would never get a British Open to finish.
That's right. They'll let those guys play. Baseball's a wholly totally different animal. Like if it's been raining all day, you can't play. Right? You shouldn't play. You can't play. I've seen some games in the rain where it's like, this is a mess. I don't like it. I don't want weather like this. It's pouring, guys throwing wet baseballs, guys slogging through the mud. I don't need that. But yeah. It was a day. Listen, they knew they could reschedule the game. It was raining all day. The forecast said it was going to rain all day, and I have no idea why Citi Field officials and the Mets office decided that they could play the game. None. Zero. No idea why they thought it was a good idea. It was not a good idea. It's a terrible idea. But, well, you took your chances with Mother Nature, and Mother Nature won, I guess.
Well, Mother Nature's undefeated.
That's right. seen baseball in snow before. That's nasty.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and
snowing at Coors Field, watching the Rockies play somebody in April.
Yeah, you kind of expect that either early April or late October for that to happen.
And it's the snow that doesn't stick. So those of you from northern area of the country, it's the snow that like kind of evaporates when it lands, but there's still a flurries that are in the sky.
And you can play in that.
You can play in that.
You know, but like, you know, the downpour. I mean, we've seen a light drizzle or maybe just a light sprinkle.
You got to be real careful. That baseball, it gets out of the hands quickly, and it loses its – you lose your grip on it. You don't need to be messing around with that.
No, you lose your grip on the bat.
Right. Lose your grip on the bat. Especially guys running at full speed to catch a ball when it's soaking wet outside, even with cleats on. You don't need that. It's a totally different game. It doesn't need to be affected by weather like that. It's, you know, it's like the ball lands in the puddle, and it's like, ugh. You don't need that. But for Marcus Stroman, it stinks. Like you said, he went out there for a couple of pitches. Now he's got to wait 5 days to pitch again when he could pitch tonight, right? When they could have just called the game off and he could have pitched tonight against whatever series they're starting up again. So that's another Metsian thing. So we've already ripped the Mets twice already today.
Yeah, you know what? I guess maybe I was premature on thinking that, you know, when Steve Cohen bought the Mets, that they were going to do sensible things.
Wasting Jacob DeGrom and then throwing out Marcus Stroman for seven pitches?
Yeah.
Rain out?
They've been able to still do Metsy things, so it's kind of fun. I appreciate that, Mets.
That's the one thing about baseball. I used to say, I've had a lot of friends who have been beat writers for the Rockies, who have taken their turn as beat writers for the Rockies. And it's not an easy job covering sports is pretty easy. So it's not like, you know, drilling for oil or anything like that. But it's, you go on these road trips or you stay home and you get these weather delays and you gotta wait it out until they tell you you're done. And that can be hours and hours and hours. And the worst is when a team is leaving like that night or the next day and they're not coming back. And they're like, we have got it. We're going to get this in. We are going to get this game in. And they don't start till like 10 o'clock. And it goes until like 1 in the morning because they don't want to fly back for one lousy game, especially at the end of the season when they don't need the game. Maybe both teams are out of the playoff. They don't need it. And they got to fly back to make it up. So they try to get it in. And it's, you know, so when you go to an NBA game, outside of any technical malfunction, like the lights go out in the arena or something along those lines, you're getting your NBA game in. You know it's going to start on time. It's going to end whenever it ends within a certain window of time. Baseball, you could be in the fourth inning. Here comes the rain. Last all night. We're going to get it in. We're going to wait it out. It's 11:30 and they go back out there. It's a mess. And this must have been a mess for the people who were broadcasting it, covering, going, why are we here? It's pouring outside. Why are we sitting here? Why is this game still on? I don't get it. When are we doing this? So anyway, Marcus Stroman, that's our Mets report. I would be furious, man, if I was Marcus Stroman. I would have been like, man, I could have been hurt. Like I could have been hurt out there playing in a game we should never have been out there. I would have been livid. I would have been more than just Twitter. I might have sat down with somebody and said, listen, let me share my thoughts on this. All right, can we get our act together when it comes to weather delays? Rex Hoggard's going to join us. We'll talk Masters coming up after Matsuyama wins. Did you see his caddy bow to Augusta National on that viral clip?
Yes.
That was cool, wasn't it? That was neat.
Yeah, I was glad to see the smile come once he got the green jacket, because after he won, I was like, okay, is this still, does he not know that what he did?
Yeah.
I mean, he just.
They say, it's so funny, there was a quote, I was reading this article about Matsuyama, and a lot of the guys on tour, they know him. He lives in Orlando. He's got a house in Orlando, and he's been on tour for a while. And that one of the players was saying that he got married. He's been married. And one of the players said that he's really shy. Matsuyama is really shy. And most people were shocked when he started talking about his wife because many of them didn't even know he was married and they had known him for years. And I thought, well, that's a quiet guy. That's a guy not sharing his personal life very well. But now he's a Masters champion and now he's an international superstar. Rex Hoggard will join us, tell us what it all means coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Rex Hoggard joins us, Golf Channel, to talk Masters. Hideki Matsuyama winning the tournament yesterday, one shot over Will Zalatoris. How are you, Rex?
Good. It's funny when people have said that to me this morning, that he won by one shot. It still feels like it's like a dozen shots, the way it actually all played out. But it was, it was a one-shot victory.
I was saying that this morning. If you did not watch it and just saw the leaderboard, you might have thought it was an interesting Masters. But how did you process how he won this thing?
It was a dominant performance. And really, you kind of look at the last two rounds, and he, what he did certainly on Saturday is going to be what we're going to go back to and say he won it there. I mean, that 65 was tied for the best round of the week, but given the conditions, I'll even go one better than that, simply because he had never been in that position before. And I thought, talking with different players about this, one of the best lines I got yesterday was from Jordan Spieth, and he kind of talked about how hard it is to sort of guard against a big lead when you're at the Masters and you're going towards something you've been dreaming about your entire life. Then you factor in the whole idea that no one from Japan, no male player from Japan, has ever won a major. So there was a lot of pressure. There was a lot going on, and he was brilliant on Sunday.
People have been talking about Matsuyama and his game and his ability and the taking that next step and winning a major. But I've heard that with a lot of golfers. It seems like a nice thing to say about somebody who's having success on tour or internationally. But it felt like this was real, that people really felt he was a budding international superstar. In that context, what kind of things in his game had led people to think that this was an inevitable point in his career?
I don't think there was anybody on tour that was a better consistent ball striker than him. I mean, if you kind of look at his stats, nothing really jumps off the paper other than the fact that he just doesn't miss. Like, his wild miss is 5 feet to the right, whereas most players is 20 yards left. I mean, I think if you looked at the way he played, there was a great appreciation for just how he did his craft. Now, there was always questions about his putting, and I think when it comes to this particular tournament, everyone sort of dismissed him outright simply because, okay, he's a great ball striker, he doesn't putt nearly enough. And I just think kind of a misnomer when it comes to Augusta National. You look at what he did with his approach shots, you look at what he did on par fours, that's kind of the two keys to winning the Masters, and he was really good at both of those things.
This is a little early to be asking about the impact, but right now, here on a Monday morning, what is his impact of winning the Masters for the country of Japan and for the internationally?
I kind of worked on that story last night for GolfChannel.com, and I actually talked to some folks in Japan. It was early Monday morning. They were all up early. And I go back to 2019. I was at the Zozo Championship, which was in Japan, just outside of Tokyo. And it came down to he and Tiger Woods, right? And I was taken by the idea that the crowds were huge all week long. And I was sort of absorbing the fact that the crowds were there to watch Tiger Woods because he's Tiger Woods. That's just going to happen. But they were there to cheer for Hideki. And it came down to those two. It was a Monday finish. And I remember after the crowds were great all week long because of that Monday finish, sort of there's a cultural thing that you don't miss work to go watch a golf tournament. And there was virtually no one there when they finished up. And so when I called some people that I know in Tokyo, it was funny how that had transitioned to people miss work yesterday.
Yeah.
Or Monday, I guess I should say today. They miss work today to watch this because it was historic. And it's a golf-crazy nation already, but the idea that now they have a major champion, now they have a green jacket, and you kind of put it into the context that when he was going to be the prodigal son when we return to the Tokyo for the Olympics later this summer. Now that's just going to be magnified.
Let's talk about some other storylines from this tournament. There were a lot of big names that didn't make the cut. What were they saying about the course conditions? What were they saying about the first 2 days at Augusta?
It was about as perfect as you could have wanted. I think it was almost stark by contrast because the last time we were here was November, and it was just a few months ago, and it was a vastly different golf course. It was soft. Guys could attack. It wasn't that at all this week. It was exactly what they want at Augusta. It was firm and fast, and they pretty much controlled it and gave the test exactly how they wanted it for the first two rounds. Now, Saturday, the rain that came through about halfway through the third round, that changed things a little bit. There were some surprises. I mean, I wasn't so much surprised that Rory McIlroy didn't play well because he's in the middle of a swing transition. I wasn't all that surprised that Brooks Koepka missed a cut. I mean, he was playing well, but physically just less than a month removed from knee surgery, it was always going to be a struggle for him. The one that I was surprised at was Dustin. He's the world number one. He's a defending champion. I was pretty surprised by that one.
Will Zalatoris, what a story. A guy I didn't really know existed, and now I'm finding out more about him. What was the buzz about him going into the Masters, and what is his story, his progress going to be like going forward? What does a second-place finish do for a kid like this?
I mean, no disrespect to Will. There was no buzz about Will coming into the Masters. I mean, he has had a fantastic run, but a year ago, I mean, I covered the game. I'd like to think I'd pay attention a little bit. I didn't know who Will Zalatoris was a year ago. So I think the amazing thing to me is over the last year, even year and a half, he has done things that no one else has been able to do. Because of the pandemic, there has been only one way to earn a PGA Tour card, to earn your way onto the tour, and he's done it that way. And I was talking with his coach yesterday about the idea of being his first Masters, being his first major in contention. How's he going to handle the nerves? But he has been dealing with nerves over the last year that are career changing already. He had to Monday qualify. He had to top 10. He had to do all of these things just to keep his career going on the PGA Tour. In that situation on Sunday, I mean, as refreshing as it was, and you certainly look at the way he played and you think to yourself, here's a kid that can contend not just at Augusta, but you can kind of project him out at other major champion venues this year. The thing that impressed me the most is just how he handled the pressure. It was amazing to me that a 24-year-old, never been put in that situation, he just thoroughly enjoyed the moment.
Was it surprising to you, Rex, that we didn't have somebody make a big charge? I mean, Xander Schauffele did to some extent, but we didn't feel like somebody was coming and that Hideki had better be careful because somebody was on his heels. It never felt like he was on his heels. And even at 15, it didn't feel like it was getting away from him.
I did. Yeah, I expected someone, especially on the second nine. I mean, that's what we know historically. That's the great part about the Masters Sunday, right? I mean, someone's going to make a charge. You're going to start hearing the birdies and the eagles. And I wanted to walk with Hideki as he played 10, 11, and 12, because that's usually where you start hearing the cheers. That seems like when the pressure starts to build. And it just wasn't there. I mean, Xander put himself in a position where he could have sort of pressed the issue, but we all know what happened on 16. And I just don't know that anyone was able to sustain that kind of pressure. I thought it would be Jordan Spieth, but he got off to a slow start. I thought there was a chance that Will Zalatoris could somehow find some magic, and it just never materialized.
Let's look at the larger picture for Jordan Spieth. He was the favorite coming in, winning the Texas Valero Open. His game is starting to get better. What have you noticed in Spieth that's allowed this sort of resurgence after disappearing for a while?
This has been building for a while, and this has been a long struggle for him, and he's talked about sort of these incremental improvements. He's talked about when he's at tournaments, if I can just get 1% better this week, I'm going in the right direction. And so last week, I mean, it was a great breakthrough, and you can certainly celebrate Jordan and what he means to the sport, but he would be the first to tell you that he's still at the beginning of the journey. And even yesterday when he finished up, after another solid finish at Augusta, this place that means so much to him, that, look, he's still at the beginning. He still has a lot of work to do. He has 2 weeks off, and he talked about going home and specifically working on parts of his swing that still just aren't there. And you saw it on Sunday. I mean, he wasn't able to sort of push him on back nine like I was just talking about, simply because he couldn't control his ball the way he needed to. And that's something that you know is just going to get better because we've seen him. I mean, we have seen him within the last year and a half at his absolute worst. And for him to come out, win last week, contend this week, it's a good sign for Jordan.
Rex, thank you so much for your time on a busy Monday morning with so much going on from the Masters week. Appreciate your time with us and explaining what we all watched over the weekend.
Thanks for having me on.
You got a Rex Hoggard Golf Channel, again, on our Progressive guest line, talking about the Masters. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Just some interesting thoughts. Like he was talking about with Jordan Spieth, the long time coming. It's been brewing. I love Jordan Spieth. I think he's been good for the game. He was an exciting young man winning majors and looked like he was going to take the golf world by storm. We've always looking for the next Tiger Woods, even though we know there will be no Tiger Woods. It still doesn't stop us in the sports world for projecting who's going to be the next dominant guy, because we don't want to believe that whoever it is the last person that is going to dominate in this way. We always sort of have hope that we will see things break, right? When you watch a home run king, right, or whatever it is in any sport, you kind of think that somebody down the road is going to be as good as the person you're watching. Sometimes you get it. I remember when I first started covering NASCAR, I remember watching Jeff Gordon win everything, and people were like, he's going to be better than, he's going to win more championships than Dale Earnhardt. He didn't. But there was this feeling like they wanted something. People, the fans were looking, or the media was looking for somebody to just take over. We do that with Woods occasionally, even though we know it's impossible. And Spieth looked like he could do that. But this Masters, it's going to be the impact of Hideki Matsuyama winning from Japan and the international feeling and the first Japanese male golfer to win a major. That is all well and good. This is not going to be a remembered Masters for the electricity and the fireworks that you got in the final round, where birdies and eagles were flying everywhere and everybody's watching the leaderboard. Schauffele got a little close, and then in a blink of an eye gave it away again, right? I mean, it didn't take long for something that looked like it had potential to be just washed away when he plopped it into the drink at 16. It really is. I don't think it's going to be remembered for that. But like he said, it's a one-shot victory. It felt like many, many more. It was a dominating performance. He had shots to give away. He gave some of them away, and that's why it looked close. Had he not done that, he would have won by 3 or 4 shots. Friel deep penetrating oil, rusted nuts and bolts, seized engines, corroded U-bolts, pillow blocks. You name it. If you need to get something free, Friel is what you need. Three-part formula delivering 3 times more lubricant, takes less spray, less torque, less time than any other penetrating oil to get the job done. It's body shop safe, means it's safe on paint, plastic parts, and silicone free. Give it a try. You can find it at AutoZone, O'Reilly, Napa Auto Parts stores, selected Walmart stores. If you're looking for something to loosen up, give Friel deep penetrating oil a try. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. Jake Asman show is coming up next. Oh, by the way, you know who I felt sorry for over the weekend at the Masters was Justin Rose.
Yeah.
I thought he could win that thing, but he could not. I don't feel that bad. He's a U.S. Open champion, so he's not like he's searching for his first major. But I thought he was ready to win the Masters. Justin Rose in 1998 was a 17-year-old kid, I think. 18, maybe 17. He's a teenager. And he finished fourth at the British Open. He made an eagle on the 18th hole, holing out from the fairway. It was like a 17-year-old kid at the British Open. Then he turned pro, and he didn't do so well because he's 17, right? He was turning pro at a very young age. People were like, well, this was a bad decision. No, it was a good decision because he ended up being one of the top golfers on the planet. He won a Olympic. He won a U.S. Open. Like, give people a little time. Now, they'll eventually figure it out.
Who would you peg to be the current Phil Mickelson? And what I mean by that is, you know, the person who's just always right there in contention, just can't get it done.
That's a good question.
Because that was Phil for many, many years.
That was Phil for a long time. Till his, like, mid-30s. I think he was 33 when he finally won a major.
And then finally he did, and we just sat back and we're like, yeah, well, we knew this was going to happen.
Who's that right now? That's a good question.
I know for a while, too, we used to say it was Sergio Garcia,
yep,
but
Sergio.
He kind of turned the corner on that.
So that basically that best player never to win a major thing.
Yeah.
Ricky Fowler.
Ricky Fowler. That's who I'm thinking, too.
Yeah, Ricky Fowler. I think he's the guy because he hasn't won a major, and he's
but he's kind of streaky,
oodles of talent,
isn't he?
Yeah, he is streaky. I wonder about Ricky Fowler. I know he's very talented. Don't get me wrong, but I wonder how much of the early Ricky Fowler was hype because he had an image,
the
and
flamboyant uniforms, like
yeah,
all green, all orange.
Corporate America jumped on Ricky Fowler really quick. Because he was like a motocross kid who played golf from California.
Yep. This can appeal to the young kids. Because look at the way, well, look at what he's wearing.
I mean, don't get me wrong. He could play some golf. I mean, it wasn't like he was bad. But I mean, it was the same time. It was like, I think a lot of it was marketing hype.
Of course.
And that led, you know, but, you know, he did win. He won a couple of events, won some tournaments. So, but you're right about Phil. Remember when Phil was...
Oh, he was destined never to win a major.
Just, God, what a mess. He was like, he'd be in contention at, like, a U.S. Open and then lose it, and then he would be at the Masters, and he would fade down the stretch. And then the British Open, forget it. He could not play the British Open. He hit the ball too high. He couldn't play the wind. He just did not like that course, didn't like the setup, so he wasn't even in contention in his early years. When he got to a point in his career where he's like, I know I can do this. With some practice and some thought, I could do it. He started contending in the British Open enough to win it in 2013. But can you imagine being a U.S. amateur champ, the next face of American golf, All-American at Arizona State, get on tour, you're winning tournament events at a young age, you won a PGA Tour event as an amateur, and at 33, you're still looking for your first major championship? That's a long time to be playing on tour without a championship. That was Phil Mickelson. Jake Asman Show is coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Sports Map Radio, wake up call.